Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Newly married and minted dude.
That's right.
Surprise to everyone.
It was. So we got married. Stephanie and I got married last Saturday. And we had sent out our friends, basically. They were our confederates on the in the whole ruse. They sent out some engagement.
Employed a ruse.
They sent out a engagement party invitation. So it was basically just for, it was kind of a small thing, but it was just for family. It was maybe about 50 people, and we rented a room, and they thought they were showing up for an engagement party.
Yes, we did. And then, we did think we were.
And then after about 20 or 30 minutes, I made an announcement and said, the ceremony is going to start here in a few minutes.
and we're like, oh, ha, 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 ha. Oh, wait a minute. No, he said that was straight. I really don't think he's going to give me another root beer.
No, I was dead serious. So,
and sure enough, it did.
Yeah. So some interesting statistics from the night. So we had about 50 guests there, so mainly family members. And our bar tab, there were 47 lavender martinis.
Wow.
So that was pretty solid work.
None of them were mine.
Now, in addition to lots of other things, which one of which was two shots of Jack Daniels, which you poured down my gullet right before I walked down the aisle.
I had to do something there to numb the pain. You were getting married surprise-like on me. I had to have something to celebrate. So I went up to the bartender. I said, quick, give me two shots of Jack. He's getting ready to walk down the aisle. And he gave me two shots of Jack, and I ran over and said, here, you got to chug this. Why? You just do. Okay. So we cheered and chugged.
I noticed my Jack looked like it was a little bit of a heavier pour, but I didn't really mind.
Well, here's what happened, though. He poured the two shots.
Uh-huh.
And when he poured one shot, and he went to pour the next one, and the bottle ran out.
Oh.
So he was sitting there struggling, trying to open the bottle, and I knew we were under time constraints. So I said, never mind, that'll do. You're right. My shot was a little lighter, but that was just because the bottle ran out.
See, I thought that was by design.
Nope, just because the bottle ran out. Now, I had another one later.
Did you?
Yeah, I did have another one later. I went back up, and I got, they had Woodford Reserve,
mm-hmm.
and I got a shot of that. Yeah. I had to see how that went with beer, too.
Yeah.
They had some good draft beers on tap, so that was nice.
Those were all basically the in-house beers they brew there at the Peddler.
Yeah, and they were good.
Yeah, I like the one that was a hazy IPA.
Yeah.
So that's like my new favorite thing, I think, are hazy IPAs. They're like IPAs, but they have like a lot of fruit in them, and they have a very cloudy appearance.
I like the Snake Charmer Lager. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it's your more traditional beer.
It was funny when you used that line about the ruse when we were doing the play several years back into the woods. We were doing it with the children's theater,
uh-huh.
and there was a kid playing the prince, and in one of his lines is, I have employed a ruse. So he had been doing this line, and we knew, knowing this kid, we knew he didn't know what he was saying.
Yeah.
So finally, we kept laughing about it every time he'd say it because we knew he had no idea what it meant. So finally, as we were going, he stopped right in the middle one night where we were on the show, and he goes, can I ask you something? What's that? What's a ruse? He had no idea what he was saying. And we told him what it meant, and he goes, oh, I figured it was something like that. I just wasn't sure.
Didn't Justin have a line like that, too, in one play that you always...
Well, that was what... He was the Lord Growly, which is one of the other versions of the Wizard of Oz. You have a Lord Growly and Oz, Girls of Oz, and some things like that. But in that, he is the guy like that greets him at the door and all that. It's a different character, but he's the guy that greets him at the door, and so he says that he's going to go back and see if the great Wizard of Oz will see them. So they're all out there talking, and then he comes back and he goes, he said he could not see you, and they said, well, why not? Well, he or something about what did he look like or something, and they said, well, he employs many forms, so you will never know what the wizard might look like. And he goes, well, what did he look like when you went back there? And he goes, he was invisible.
I knew it was some similar line like that.
But only Justin could make that line as big as it was. Most kids would have just gone, he was invisible. Yeah, but not Justin. He was invisible.
He's like, it's definitely Clint's kid. Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. Clint McElroy all over that kid.
Well, we thought it'd be kind of timely since I just got married in a surprise wedding. Did you have a good time?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact.
Well, I'm glad.
Well, thank you. It was a very nice event. Now, remember, as we were driving there, rushing around, because Saturday was a hectic day for us, as you know. And as we're driving there, rushing around, I'm cursing you going, damn it, it's not like this is his first rodeo or anything. Why do they have to have an engagement party? Why can't they just get married? Well, that's what you were doing.
Well, you know, honestly, what we wanted to do, and this was the original idea that I had, but we figured it was just too hard to pull off, is we wanted Wes and Martha to throw a surprise engagement party for us. So basically, we wouldn't know about it. We would just show up, and everybody would be like, oh, surprise! Yeah. And we're like, oh, yeah. Well, actually, surprise! We're getting married! So it's like a double reverse trick.
Yeah.
So, but we figured that was, logistically, it was just too hard to pull off.
Yeah. That nobody could talk to you about it or anything else.
Yeah.
All the arrangements made it. I mean, basically, we don't really know them. Mary might know them some, but I don't really know them, so... I don't know. If they had called me up and invited me to a party that they were having, I don't know if I would have come. I don't know who they were.
That was our problem, too.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to tell. We didn't want to let any of the family in on it because we wanted it to be a surprise for the family. So.
Well, it was.
Yeah. Well, of course, at one point before I made the announcement, I looked over and I looked at Mary, and Mary just looked at me.
Well, Mary called it. So did, what's her name? Jennings. Tara.
Tara?
Yeah.
Well, I looked over at Stephanie. I said, Mary knows. I could just tell the way she was looking at me.
Yeah, girls have an instinct for that kind of thing. Guys don't. Guys are like, well, at least there's an open bar. All right. What? Someone's going to get married? Hey, what's going on here?
Yeah, I thought the food was really good, too. I was pretty happy with that.
Well, it was their usual, Peddler and Backyard.
Yeah, the shrimp were delicious.
Yeah, the shrimp were good. The pizza was good.
Yeah.
What was the other? There was something else they had. Oh, wings.
Yeah, the dry rub chicken wings.
Yeah, those were good, too.
Delicious.
I had me two or three plates full of each.
I'll tell you what, on Sunday, we had to go back over and...
And eat.
No, and get and get our decorations back and bring them because the Peddler was closed on
Monday. Yeah, that's right.
But they were there doing some work, but we wanted to go and bring our stuff back to the house. We didn't have to move everything on Monday. I was feeling a little rough on Sunday, having to move all that stuff, especially with this heat wave we've had recently.
Yeah,
Sunday was a rough day.
Yeah, I would too.
So, so we thought today would be a good episode to talk about marriage law and different marriage things.
That's right, since you're a veteran of it now.
I am.
Veteran of many marriages, so you should know all about it.
That's right. I have several...
the do's and don'ts.
several medals.
That's right.
Victory and defeat.
You made a wise choice in not having me preside over it this time. I did the last time. That didn't work out so well. True. So I'm 0-1, and I'm retired from doing that anymore. I'm going to let my internet credentials expire.
My internet credentials.
That's where they came from. Yeah. I don't even know why that's legal. Well, that's a crazy marriage law.
The internet taketh and giveth away.
Yeah, that's right. They sure did.
Well, yeah, I guess in West Virginia, to be a minister, you just have to have some sort of certification.
Yeah, and they give it to you on the internet. You just fill out a paper. I told them I belong to the Church of the Latter-day Sleep In.
I wanted you to be ordained in the Big Lebowski religion.
Yeah, that would have been all right, too.
Yeah.
The dude abides.
Yeah. Communion is basically just a series of white Russians. But this episode is on marriage law, and essentially when you get married, a lot of things change.
True. Yeah, a lot of things change.
And in order to get married, there's different laws that are around as well, which, you know, maybe you can or cannot get married. One of the more interesting things, or things you always think about whenever you're talking about people getting married, is the age of consent, because young people, they're very idealistic. They want to get married. They love. They live, they love.
They love being in love.
They do. But generally, the age of consent to get married, if you are 16 or 17, you can do it, but you have to have consent of at least one guardian, unless you're already previously emancipated. Not emaciated, emancipated.
Emancipated.
And sometimes they have to be actually 18 to be married, too. So, but it varies state by state. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, if you're under the age of 18, you have to have some sort of consent from a guardian or something along those lines. Also in West Virginia, you have to basically affirm that you are not any closer than second cousins. So any jokes out there about West Virginia, just forget about it.
Hey, if she ain't good enough for her own family, she ain't good enough for ours.
But those are kind of like your threshold things. And you also have to go down and obtain a license, because you have to get a license in order to get married. I know, it's kind of strange, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm thinking of all those West Virginia jokes I've heard.
Well, one of the interesting things is that they charge you, I think it was $56 to get a marriage license. But if you've taken a week-long counseling course, it's they knock $20 off, and it's like $36.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, to get married in the Catholic Church, you have to take the pre-Cana conference.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if that counts.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
Because I didn't know if they recognize that as like a Christian thing or something.
Yeah, they do.
Well, you know, Catholics aren't Christians, so that's, you know, we've had that discussion.
I think they are, though, technically.
Well, they're not believed to be. I was asked that before. Are you a Christian? Well, I'm Catholic. Oh, well, then you're not Christian. I was like, oh, I'm not?
Never mind. You can't
come in. That's a surprise.
Never mind. You can't come in.
have you been saved? And I'm in the bathroom, and I'm like, I don't want to be saved in the bathroom. Please leave.
I didn't know I was in trouble. Oh, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
One of the other things they do is they actually have you read this this oath, basically saying that, you know, you understand that domestic abuse is a real problem and you promise not to do it and this, that, and the other. And so we read this, or the lady read it to us, and she just kind of looked at us, and I said, I do? And Stephanie just started laughing.
Well, did she expect you to repeat it?
I don't know. It was very odd. It was very weird.
Was that when you got the license?
Yeah.
And so they read an oath?
Yeah, they read some sort of oath about domestic violence, and which, you know, I mean, obviously not a joking matter, but... And the lady just sat there and looked at us.
The way they go about it is.
Well, there was
You didn't know what the proper response was, huh?
Yeah, she didn't say, I'm going to have to read this.
Repeat after me.
After I read this to you, please affirm by saying yes, or I agree, or whatever.
Nod your head.
Yeah.
Drool something.
She didn't say any of that. She just read it to us, and there was a very awkward pause. And I looked over at Stephanie, and I said, I do? Stephanie's like, are we married now? So, but there's each state's going to have their own different things you have to do. One thing interesting, too, if you have been married before in West Virginia, you have to give the date of your prior marriage was terminated. Mm. So it's very important to know the day you were actually divorced if you were getting remarried. So if you don't know that date, you couldn't get your license. Hmm. So,
well, that's probably for good reason.
Yeah, because they want people being married to multiple people, because that's against the law.
Well, that's right. Unless you live out in the wilds of Utah or something, I guess.
It's still against the law there, too.
They just got to find you first.
You watched that. You turned me on to that show. Was it Big Love? Or what was the one on HBO or Showtime? Had to do with the polygamists that lived in Utah.
Not Sister Wives.
Yeah, Sister Wives.
Oh, that's not on. That's just on regular cable.
Well, no, there was one that was like it had Bill Paxton in it. It was a drama.
Oh, okay.
That was Big Love.
Big Love. Yeah, you're right. That's what that was.
I think I watched that for the first time at your house.
Maybe so.
So it was a pretty interesting show.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well,
I digress.
I couldn't handle more than one wife. I don't know how that works.
I would tend to agree with you. It would be difficult.
I'm not going to elaborate. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Well, I mean, you know, you want to give all your attention to your one person.
And all your money.
If you say so. We actually are going to talk about marriage laws a bit more in depth, but before we get into that, I think we're going to have an ad today.
Have an ad? We hadn't even done nothing yet. Have an ad? We haven't even been working.
I know. Well, it's kind of like a holiday. It's 4th of July weekend.
Well, all right then.
Who's on the docket?
We'd like permission to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right. Who
now ask me who's on the docket.
Who approached?
Who approached? It is BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? I know sometimes there are for me.
Well, we all have those times where we need a little help, and it's always better to get BetterHelp.
That's right. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 24 hours.
It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. Sometimes all you need is just somebody to talk to and give a little insight back to you.
That's right. There is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's counselor network, which may not be locally available in many areas.
Especially like a rural area like West Virginia, finding mental health counseling and somebody to talk to can be a difficult task.
There's a shortage of those around here.
There is. And with BetterHelp, the service is available for clients worldwide.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule a weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room like you would at a traditional therapy, reading old magazines.
That's right. We've been over why those are there. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Don't we all want to start living a happier life today?
We do. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily.
Visit BetterHelp.com/court. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And also, just for our listeners, there's a special offer. Listeners get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/court. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/court.
Your help is waiting for you today. Now, I would say back to the subject, but I don't think we ever got there.
That's right. And that's going to bring us to legal breeze.
What?
Oh, just kidding.
Well, my first marriage, I ran off and got married. I eloped.
You did. Didn't you all go to Virginia?
Yeah.
It's for lovers.
Parrishburg, Virginia.
I know where that is.
Right across the line there from West Virginia into Virginia, because you could get married in one day.
You couldn't get married in one day here in West Virginia?
No. By the time the license went through and all that other kind of stuff, it took longer. You had to have a blood test. I guess they wanted to see if you were related to them or something. I don't know.
You used to have a blood test to get married?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was, they wanted to see if you had some kind of like syphilis or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, I really do.
That's what it was for.
I think so. I'm not positive, but I think so. But you had to go get the license and you had to get the blood test, and then you go to the minister, and they had it all set up in Parrishburg. It's like a package deal. You could go there, and they pointed you in the right direction.
One-stop shop.
Yeah, they said, all right, who do you want to marry? We got available a Baptist, a Methodist, and a Presbyterian.
There's no priest.
No, there was no priest. Priests wouldn't do that kind of stuff.
Probably not.
We said, well, we kind of have people in the others. We don't have any Methodists that we know, so let's go there, because then we'll be anonymous. So we chose a Methodist guy to do it.
Yeah.
He married us. We drove back home, dropped her off at sorority house, and I went back to fraternity house, and that was the end of that.
And thus we were married.
There we were.
So you decided you wanted to do it one day?
Yep.
Yeah, there you go.
We decided we either had to get married or break up, one or the other, because this dating stuff just wasn't enough.
So I checked. A quick Google search says that blood test requirements, usually premarital blood tests, check for venereal disease or rubella. So you were right.
That's what I always understood. I never knew if it was true because, you know, I went operated on a lot of word on the street information.
Yeah.
There was no Google back in those days. Like, did this guy know what he was talking about? But, you know, they made us go do that. I remember that. We had to drive to the hospital and get the marriage blood test.
Now, once you get married, it affects a lot of different things in your life. It can affect inheritance, taxes, insurance, you know, all those different things. Like I say, death and taxes.
Sleeping arrangements?
Sleeping arrangements. In some societies, actually, it can change, like, who's in charge of providing the food, means of support, things like that. So, I mean, really kind of a societal type thing. But here in the United States, it's mainly more of a kind of a contractual, legal, death and taxes type thing, I think. There's not any kind of legal obligations that come along with any kind of duties actually inside the...
Duties. Inside marital duties.
Inside the marriage. one thing I think, you know, for the most part, as since there is a grounds for divorce for being a cruel and unusual punishment, is that basically monogamy...
Cruel and unusual punishment?
Yeah.
Grounds for divorce or cruel and unusual punishment?
Well, I mean, yeah, cruel and unusual punishment.
Cruel and unusual treatment.
Treatment, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
What do you mean punishment? Who's getting punished here?
Well, in a good marriage, I guess both people are.
That's right. 50-50. You have equal punishment. Nobody should be punished more than the other. They both should get their share.
But generally, monogamy is one of the things that is considered something that's kind of a marital duty in the United States. Because
true, that's a duty.
If you have an affair or something along those lines, that's when you can file for divorce under cruel and unusual treatment.
You don't have to have a reason anymore, though.
You don't, but...
But you might get more money.
Well, yeah, and basically, the way it works in West Virginia is if you prove a fault ground, it can limit the other person's access to different kinds of support and things like that. So, I think actually the way the case law stands right now is that if there is a fault-based grounds for a divorce, that you're barred from receiving any kind of spousal support. So, sometimes it can be important.
Yeah, it seems like most of the time, especially when it's celebrities, it's irreconcilable differences.
Well, and I would say 95% of the time, that's what the divorce ends up being in all cases anyway. Well, people agree to that.
And that came about, I would assume, once they went to no-fault marriage. That up until no-fault marriage, you probably didn't really have that.
You mean no-fault divorce?
Yeah, no-fault marriage. They're all that. No fault divorce is what I meant, is that irreconcilable differences, you couldn't have that.
Yeah.
Really, up until there was no fault, because irreconcilable differences means you're both just unhappy or whatever.
Yeah.
You need somebody to blame.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. Like, why are we going to stick two people in this unhappy situation until somebody does something that gives them grounds to get divorced?
Well, that was like that article that somebody submitted on our Facebook page about the guy that went and robbed the banks or whatever it was so that he would be put in jail to get away from his wife, but they gave him home confinement. That judge has a sense of humor, doesn't he?
If you look
he did that.
That's the definition of irony right there.
Just desserts.
So some of the history of marriage I thought was really interesting, especially ancient Roman law. Now, ancient Roman law had three different forms of marriage, and I did not know this. The confortatio, and that was basically a very serious ceremony and involved a lot of witnesses and an animal sacrifice.
Wow.
So you know it's serious. And that was basically reserved for patrician families, patrician meaning like the wealthy elites. Mm. And the Flamen Dialis and the Pontifex Maximus presided over the wedding.
Wow.
And you had to have 10 different witnesses there.
The Flamen Cheeto.
And basically, the woman passed directly from the hand of her father to or the head of the household, the paterfamilias, to that of her new husband. So it was kind of a very formalized type thing. But if you think about those, there's still a little aspect of that in our kind of modern-day traditional ceremonies.
Sure.
So, you know, the father giving away the bride. Mm-hmm. You have a best man and groomsman. You have a maid or matron of honor and maids of honor or matrons of honor. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you've ever been to a ceremonial Catholic wedding, a lot of that, I mean, basically you could see in it.
Yeah. And basically, the Flamen Dialis, or Flamen Dialis, that was the high priest of Jupiter.
High priest of Jupiter? Yeah, he came down from Jupiter?
It was pretty serious.
Jumping Jupiter!
The second kind was the coemptio, which was used by many plebeians, or kind of common folks. And that was essentially kind of marriage by purchase, is how it's defined. I think that might be kind of similar to like a dowry. Like,
so you pay a dowry and get your wife?
Yeah, kind of. And then usus was actually the most informal variety.
It should be useless.
And it was marriage simply by mutual consent and evidence evidence of extended cohabitation. So almost like a common law marriage.
Yeah.
So those are the three different kinds. You have the very formalized ceremony, you have the dowry type, and then you have the common law, essentially.
Why are you getting married? Because he's useless. Somebody's got to help him.
Now, obviously, the difference is in Roman law, placed the woman kind of under the control of the husband, kind of similar to almost like children.
Right.
And actually, no slaves could contract to be married either, because they didn't have the ability to do that themselves without any kind of agreement by whoever the slaveholder was.
Hmm.
Now, we talked about dowry, and the dowry is essentially a transfer of some sort of property or gifts at the time of marriage.
Chattel, if you will.
Chattel, yeah. And there's a couple different concepts that are kind of going on there. And saying basically, it's almost like a bride price or a dower. And basically, this is essentially just a payment to the groom or the groom's family by the bride's parents to get married.
To take her off their hands.
Kind of, yeah.
So they don't have to support her the rest of her life.
And then sometimes it was actually looked at as like it was basically an early inheritance. So that was her inheritance, and she was getting it early, and that was to help support. So
to help them get off to a good start in life.
That's right. Now, I thought those were, obviously some antiquated type things going on there. And actually, dowry, although it's an ancient custom, which hasn't been around for quite some time, it was actually just recently outlawed in India. And one of the reports I read said that basically still kind of goes on under the table. So,
Well, there's probably people that waited there and they've paid dowries and wait a minute, I'm not going to get mine back.
It's like, this isn't fair.
It's like my mom's reaction when we did run off and get married. She said, you mean all those wedding gifts I sent all these years to people, and now you run off and get married, you don't have a wedding? We're not going to get those wedding gifts back.
You don't understand the process, Tommy. But I thought the Roman thing was very interesting, though, because if you think about it, I mean, that is basically very similar to a lot of the laws that kind of we have now.
Well, and it's very similar to the ways people get married. You have the ones that have the big weddings in the churches and the ceremonies and all those kind of stuff. Then you have the ones that go down and have the justice of the peace marry them. And then you have the ones that do it, like, very simply by cohabitating and stuff.
By common law?
Yeah.
And
common law outlaw.
The Catholic Church obviously plays a pretty large role in marriage in history.
Mm-hmm.
And the church historically regarded marriage as basically a lifelong and sacred union that could only be dissolved by the death of one of the spouses. Which right. we talked about that before when we were talking about, I can't remember the exact term, but I believe we called it the erection courts.
it was the erection court?
Impotence court.
Impotence court, yeah.
Well, same thing.
Impotence battles or whatever they had?
Yeah. And that was one of the grounds where people were trying to showed that they had the right to have their marriage
annulled
or divorced because the person couldn't perform their marital duties, which was...
I don't think the Catholic Church ever recognized that, though.
No, but...
They didn't recognize that. They didn't care if you were impotent or not.
They just said it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they didn't want you really doing anything about it anyway. They didn't care.
I think one of the reasons why the marriage was so sacred to the Roman Catholic Church is because it's viewed as one of the sacraments. And so...
I just always remember when the Pope came out and said that the church was against birth control, that it wasn't right. You couldn't have birth control. And the old Italian lady standing up there and she says, you no play the game, you no make it the rules.
Do you remember that there was an old Catholic comedy called Heaven Help Us? And it came out
the name's familiar.
It came out in the 80s.
The name's familiar. I don't think I ever watched it.
And there was one guy who's kind of these were high school students in a Catholic high school, and he was kind of the smarmy, trickster kind of guy. And he was telling this girl, he said, and the Pope was coming to town. Mm-hmm. And he said, basically, if we're holding hands and kiss when the Pope blesses us, that we're basically as good as married. So we can go ahead and, go do it.
Yeah. That was his
rationale.
Well, they did just have a show on TV that was about a large Catholic family back in the 70s. And it was so reminiscent of somebody that I knew from our neighborhood. They had like eight kids, all boys.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother was kind of a combination of your mother. She was mixed right in there with the way she was. That was a good show, but it's already off the air. It only lasted one season.
What was it called?
I thought it was hilarious. Oh, The Kids Are All Right.
The Kids Are All Right?
Yeah. And it was absolutely hilarious. It was it was told from the point of view of one of the middle kids, one of the middle sons out of there.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious. The oldest son, because what was the biggest thing in a Catholic family about wanting their son to become?
Oh, a priest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the oldest son goes off to go to seminary and become a priest. And they're just like, everybody in the community is like revering them because the son did right. that. And the priest points them out at church all the time and everything. Then the kid comes home, decides he gave it up because he couldn't stand staying away from girls.
That's
so
funny.
So now they're disgraced because he dropped out of seminary and he's living back home and he's got long hair and everything. While he had the long hair when he was in seminary, they thought that was okay because he's right. becoming godlike, right. Jesus-like, you yeah. know. But now he's got to cut his hair and get a job.
That's funny.
But it was a hilarious show. I don't know why it's going off the air unless it was only liked by us Catholics. I don't know.
Maybe so. The whole I think Catholic comedy thing, I think is seems to be dying off a little bit, possibly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're all becoming blended, I think.
That's probably true. So marriage law, as it was kind of in England, it basically kind of developed to be certain different characteristics as well. And each party basically had to be a certain age, so kind of similar to what we have now. Each had to be sexually competent and mentally capable.
So, sexually competent? How do you prove that? That sounds like impotence court again.
It does. So, you know, still you have to be mentally capable now. That's one thing you have to do because
yeah.
in order to essentially kind of marriage in America now is basically like almost like a contract. And mm-hmm. you have to have that mental capacity to be able to contract.
Mens rea is what we call it in the biz.
That's right. Mens rea. Well, and basically if you're sexually competent, that's probably the actus reus.
Yeah. So, the sextus reus.
Sextus reus. And each person had to be free to marry, meaning they weren't married to anybody else. They had to give their consent to marry, meaning they weren't forced into it. And they actually had to be so far apart that they weren't related, basically. So it's kind of a very similar type thing as it developed in England. So obviously...
Except a lot of them married within their family to keep the bloodlines pure as far as royals.
Well, that could be the case, too, because they might have had to have been close enough.
They were close... Close as it gets.
So most marriage law in European nations, the U.S., is based on that kind of theory of what we just talked about. That's kind of the norms for the ability to be able to get married.
Norm.
Norm! So modern marriage, taking away the different kind of religious aspects of it, it is really almost kind of more of like a civil transaction and a civil union, speaking from the government's point of view. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things as to why I think our current trend with regards to gay marriage and things like that has kind of changed, because people realize that in order to be married, take the religion out of it, there's a lot of different governmental type things that go along with it. It's almost more like kind of some sort of civil contract that goes together.
Well, I think that I don't know what topic it was, whether it was divorce or whatever, but that we discussed about how the government wants you to get married because it like organizes everything for the government. So it works in their favor. So they that's kind of one of the reasons they offer it. It makes a more orderly society.
That's true. And I think, you know, we've kind of come full circle because in 1996, there was the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which defined marriage as a legal union between one man and one woman only, and allowed states to basically refuse to recognize same-sex marriages performed by the states. And a lot of states passed laws to do just that. But basically in 2013, the Supreme Court said that Defense of Marriage Act was unconstitutional. And so you have the 2015 case, Obergefell v. Hodges, which the Supreme Court basically said that, you know, same-sex marriage was allowed. It was unconstitutional to prohibit it.
Right.
So, and that was in 2015. So it's kind of been a trend, as you can see, obviously, that it's flipped around.
Well, I think it went with society, and because the polling numbers kept showing that society in the U.S. had changed their feelings towards that, and that you had a majority of the people that said they were in favor of it.
Yeah, and it makes sense because it creates a lot of problems. You have these lifelong same-sex partners who have all these assets together and things like that, and they're not afforded the same legal protections that heterosexual couples are, so...
I mean, it's like almost for the same reasons as why you don't want to keep people together that want to get divorced.
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't you want to keep people together that want to be together?
Now, one of the reasons, and this is what that Obergefell case was based on, I've talked about this before, but a lot of people don't know about this case, was the case of Loving v. Virginia.
Right.
And that was the case that took place back in 1967, and essentially There was a Virginia law, which was an anti-miscegenation law, which wanted to preserve the racial integrity of citizens in the corruption of blood. And basically it outlawed marriage between
interracial marriage.
Mm-hmm. And Richard and Mildred Loving, a white man and African-American woman, they were married in Washington, D.C., but they wanted to live in Virginia. And police busted in their house and found them in bed together. And with their marriage license, they were arrested and charged under that law. And so basically they pled guilty to the law because they didn't really have a defense. It was a law on the books, and they were guilty of it. And they were sentenced to choose either 1 year in prison or to move out of Virginia for 25 years. That was their choice.
So just banish them.
Yeah. So they moved to D.C., but they really wanted to live in their home state, as well they had the right to.
You can do whatever you want, but you can't do it here.
Yeah. And well, I guess they were like, well, if you got married there, then you can live there. That's mm-hmm. probably the
rationale. They got married in Maryland, I believe.
I think it was D.C.
Was it D.C.?
I don't know. But
it was something like that, and then went back yeah. over Virginia.
But anyway, they appealed it, and that it got to the Supreme Court. And basically, the Supreme Court said that racial classifications are subjected to the most rigid scrutiny under laws because they're just kind of inherently a problem to begin with. You're already looking at them kind of with squinty eyes, thinking, like, something doesn't right. seem right here. And basically, Virginia's law, they found that it served no other purpose than to further
discriminate.
Racial discrimination, yeah. And as such, the law clearly violated equal protection.
They've got a good movie out about that.
They do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came out not too long ago. And so, basically, the case stands for a landmark kind of decision, and mm-hmm. it's the first unanimous decision that served as a good example of the unconstitutionality of a statute that is discriminatory on its face. And second, as we were talking about, it classifies marriage as a fundamental right. And once marriage is classified as a fundamental right, it basically set the stage for that Obergefell v. Hodges, which basically said that a ban on same-sex marriage was determined to be a violation of the Equal Protection and Due Process Clauses of the 14th Amendment, because right. marriage is essentially a fundamental right. So, based on that case...
Those two cases are tied together in that manner.
Oh, I think so. And I think it was no surprise to me when that case came out, because to me it seems like the natural progression from it.
Right.
I read some of the dissents from the Obergefell case, because I hadn't actually read the dissents, but it was a close decision. It was a 5-4. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to differentiate basically between the fact that the whole man and woman is defined as marriage, and that they were trying to say Loving v. Virginia was not the same because that was involving a man and a woman and not, you know, a man or a woman and a woman.
But you couldn't show a constructive purpose for either one.
Yeah.
That was the problem. I mean, whether it's race or gender, what's the constructive reason for keeping two people that want to be together being together?
Yeah, and afford them all the same basic fundamental rights. I mean, once you already said marriage is a fundamental right, I don't see how you get around it.
Right.
Unless you're saying it's not, mm-hmm. then we're going back to have these kind of racial laws. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a step in the right direction, obviously. And I'm a little surprised at some of the dissents about how they were kind of, I don't know, I mean, just seemed wishy-washy. They didn't really seem like they were based on any real legal argument.
I would like to think that if they did it now, that it would be unanimous.
Well, let's hope. I don't know.
Well, we don't have to hope. It's not going back, I wouldn't think.
The court's a little different these days. Now, obviously, you and I know more about kind of Western culture and Western marriages and things like that. But in Muslim countries in the Middle East, like and also North Africa and places like that, marriage is essentially the contract between two spouses for the legalization of intercourse and the procreation of children. So that's kind of the basis, the more the theory of that.
Hey, we're legal now!
Yeah. Is essentially viewed as a gift from God. And the terms of marriage depend on the will of the consenting parties, and it may be constituted without any ceremony. The essential requirement of marriage is an offer and acceptance. So just your basic contract principles there. Islamic law has historically permitted the practice of limited polygamy, but basically, in this day and age, it's kind of not
frowned upon.
It's frowned upon. It's not very prevalent. But yeah. historically, it was viewed as okay.
There's still some Islamic groups that practice it.
I believe so, but I think they're probably like just there's still
but,
some.
But Mormon. They're like breakout groups, just like the Mormon Church condemned it, but that FLDS that broke off from the Mormon Church
right.
is the ones that practice it.
Yeah. So, but pretty much polygamy is prohibited just about everywhere. I will say that I think that domestic law or marital law, matrimonial law, however you want to call it, it's one of those practice areas for a lawyer that is just business is booming. Like there is always going to be a need for family lawyers.
Well, the one question that we saw on the Facebook page after you got married was, did Mike go back and listen to the prenuptial episode that you all did so that he was made sure he protected himself?
I don't have anything to protect.
No. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Got nothing to lose.
No. I had already put the cart in front of the horse in that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was no asking for a prenup on that one. I don't think Stephanie was going to ask for a prenup either. We were already pretty much living in sin at this point.
You were living in the cart.
That's right.
The horse was the only one not there.
Yeah.
Well, I looked around and found some obscure things, either that still are or were, and on concerning marriage laws in the U.S. Ever since North Dakota approved no-fault divorce in 1985, New York was the lone holdout. So New York was the last state to okay no-fault divorce, and that wasn't until 2010.
Yeah.
Which was pretty recently that you still had to go into, you figure all the millions of people in New York, and you had to go in with a reason why you wanted a divorce.
Well, you know, that's probably a pretty strong lobby from the family lawyers. They probably make a lot more money up there.
Dragging it out, trying to prove something.
Trying to prove it, yeah.
Well, that could be, but that's a sorry reason.
It is a sorry reason.
Because there's a lot of human suffering at stake there.
There are. Yeah, I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying I'm kind of wondering why that took so long to come around, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of the reason.
Now, here's one other one that you may not have known about. You can have marriage by proxy for military personnel.
Oh, yep.
Marriage by proxy, which means someone can stand in for a bride or a groom who can't be present at his or her own wedding, and it's limited to members of the U.S. Armed Forces. But of the five states that allow the practice, California, Kansas, Colorado, Texas, and Montana, Montana is the only one that allows double proxy weddings. Essentially, neither one of them's there. You have a stand-in bride and groom, and neither one of the actual participants are there.
That'd be a heck of a party.
Yeah. Yeah, how did we do? Oh, it was a great party. You should have been there.
Yeah. I forgot my vows, though. It was a little awkward.
Marriage under the age of 18 with parental consent. For a few months between 2007 and 2008, anyone under 18 could get married in the state of Arkansas with parental consent. That's right, even babies could get married as long as their parents agreed. The original law was meant to allow pregnant teenagers to get married if their parents approved, but lawmakers forgot to put an age minimum, which combined with a grammatical error left the law open to anyone of any age. After months of embarrassment for the state, the law was finally corrected in April 2008, making the minimum age 17 for boys and 16 for girls.
Sometimes those commas are very important.
It is legal to annul a marriage that was done on a dare. Ever been dared to get married as a prank? No, me neither. But apparently this happens often enough in Delaware.
Bet you won't do it.
It's an actual option when couples file for annulment.
Double dog dare you.
No, you can't pass up a double dog dare.
That's right.
Along with the basic reasons such as marrying without the capacity to consent, under duress, or with fraudulent information, couples can now check because of a jest or dare. That you can do that when applying to dissolve your marriage.
That seems like a bad joke.
I know. It must have happened enough, though, if they got to put it in the laws. It was a dare, I tell you, a dare. Who would have married her? Look at her. Wouldn't it be me?
Maybe it happened to one person one time.
And he was in the legislature.
Yeah.
So he did it for himself. Illegal to marry the same man four times. Well, I'd be in trouble. Mary and I have been married four times.
Have you?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So I'd be in trouble.
Well, but...
Because we ran off and eloped.
Yep.
2 years later, we got married in the church.
Right.
Then at one point, we did actually get divorced.
Right.
And remarried.
Right.
And that was at the courthouse. And then we had our 35-year or something, we renewed our vows in the church. So that's four.
That's four.
So I guess we're illegal now.
Well, it's only in Kentucky, though, right?
Oh, that's true. In the state of Kentucky, it's illegal to remarry the same man four times. Honestly, good for Kentucky. If you've already divorced three times, someone needs to step in because you're clearly not the best decision maker in the world. Of course, as long as it's different men, you can get married and divorced as many times as you like. Let the good times roll.
There you go.
It's legal that a man must prove himself by killing birds. In Truro, Massachusetts, a groom-to-be must prove himself manly prior to marriage by hunting and killing either 6 blackbirds or 3 crows. Manly is a good thing. Dead birds, not so much.
It seemed like maybe that was one of those things that they had a lot of cornfields there, and they had a little bit of a bird problem. They thought, people are going to keep getting married, so let's, instead of making them pay a fee, let's make them kill some birds.
Well, I'm thinking it's a way that a father that doesn't approve of the guy his daughter's marrying, he would only push this, it has to do it, if he didn't want him to marry him, and the guy's like a bad shot, you know, or, you know, something like that. For some reason, he's...
Or the potential father-in-law takes him out hunting and accidentally shoots him.
Yeah.
we were just trying to get his quota.
Yeah.
And, you know...
We missed.
Yeah.
It's illegal.
You can pull a Cheney on him.
That's right. I was thinking Dick Cheney. It's illegal for married couples to sleep nude in a rented room. Despite the fact that the infamous witch trials were over 300 years ago, religious conservatism is still alive in Salem, Massachusetts. At least on the law books. Apparently, married couples are not allowed to sleep in the nude in a rented room. Of course, reflecting on numerous media reports about germs and hotel bedspreads, that doesn't sound like such a bad idea.
Don't bring in the black light.
It is illegal for men over 16 to propose marriage and not mean it. In South Carolina, it is illegal for a man over 16 years old to propose marriage and not mean it. Doing so means he's committing a misdemeanor under the Offenses Against Morality and Decency Act. OAMDA. I guess that's what they call that. Not sure if that means he will be forced to marry the woman in question, or if it just means he can't ask for a woman's hand as a way to seduce her.
Ah.
We hope it's the latter.
Yeah.
Illegal mistreatment of mother-in-law as grounds for divorce. Many husbands would probably say their mother-in-law isn't their favorite person in the world, but for those who really, really dislike their wife's mother, moving to Wichita, Kansas might be a good option. In this city, a man's mistreatment of his mother-in-law may not be used as grounds for divorce. Illegal for married couples to kiss in public on Sundays.
Whoa.
Imagine it. You get a babysitter so you and your hubby can go out for a romantic dinner. Afterwards, you take a stroll around the town. Caught in the moment, you lean in for a passionate kiss. Busted. The police can cuff you and throw you in jail. That is, if you live in Hartford, Connecticut, and it's Sunday. Well, maybe not these days, but technically, it's still illegal in this city for a man to kiss his wife on the Lord's Day.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Hartford, Connecticut.
Who would have thought?
Illegal for palm readers and fortune tellers to officiate a wedding.
Ah, this is a good one.
It's most likely that your wedding was officiated by a religious figure or judge. Or if you're a bit more eccentric than some, you had a friend become ordained online, yes, so he or she could marry you.
Tommy.
Good thing you went with the tried true. New Orleans has made it illegal for palm readers, fortune tellers, mystics, and the like to officiate a wedding. I guess they don't want you peeking at your future. You'll just have to go into it with blind faith like everybody else.
So. Maybe they're thinking that basically you would go in to see someone read your palm or predict your future for you.
To decide.
They're like, you know what? I think I see a marriage in your future. I'll tell you what. I'll do it right here for an extra $50.
Yeah. Well, now, that was America, and so I started looking, and I thought, I wonder if other countries have some weird things. And I wasn't quite as successful as it were with America. Apparently, we're the wackiest ones, the most antiquated stuff or whatever. But I looked at Canada and Australia, because those are, when you look at our downloads, the two countries outside of the U.S. where we get the most downloads. So I figured I'd look there. So first, we looked at Canada. Their biggest problem with their weirdest thing with their marriage is... The polygamy section of the criminal code violates the protection of religious freedom provided by the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is like their constitution.
Yeah.
So they have had a hard time being able to prosecute polygamists. So polygamists have been proliferating there.
Like all those peas.
Yeah, I couldn't say that right back together. And what they finally determined is it was because of their age of consent. It was because their biggest problem was a lot of times within these polygamists, they were having some of their wives that were 14 and 15 years old
right. When
they were marrying them. So it was more of a child abuse type situation than it was an actual polygamy situation.
Right.
So they raised the age of consent to 16.
Yeah, that was like one of the things. And I watched that thing about the Branch Davidians and David Koresh, mm-hmm. that they were worried about child abuse in there too.
Right.
So
So they raised the age of consent to 16. So they basically said, if you want to marry, have multiple women, multiple wives, and they're in their 20s or whatever, or at least over 16, they're not really going to do anything to you because they don't know what to do with this law because it conflicts with their constitution.
Yeah.
So basically, if you want to be a polygamist up there, you could. You just have to marry older women. Don't marry the kids.
Well, that's probably a good thing to begin with.
Well,
that's good advice to begin with.
That's true.
Don't marry kids.
Now, Australia, there was a little bit of stuff in Australia. It says in Australia, it's against the law to disrupt a wedding. According to the Summary of Offenses Act 7A, any person who intentionally obstructs or disturbs a wedding ceremony or a funeral, whether secular or religious, is guilty of an offense and could face a maximum penalty of a whopping $10,000 or 2 years imprisonment.
Wow. That's a serious deal.
That's right. Now, I don't know how the part where speak now or forever hold your peace fits in there, depending on how you go about that.
Yeah.
That could disrupt a wedding, so you might be careful about that.
Sounds like entrapment.
And it said, a bonus fact, it's illegal in Queensland to publish or broadcast a phony birth, marriage, death, or new job. If it's phony, you can't publish it.
Well, makes sense.
Yeah. Now, this was a timeline of things that affected marriage in Australia through the years. Married women can own property came about June 10th, 1884. Victoria becomes the first Australian colony to pass legislation allowing married women the right to own property. So before that, they weren't allowed to. It was the husband's property.
Right.
All right. Laws control Aboriginal marriage, June 1st, 1918. The Aboriginals Ordinance of 1918 restricts marriage between Indigenous women and non-Indigenous men in the Northern Territory. There were also state laws in place to control marriage for Indigenous Australians. The marriage age was raised. November 16, 1942, Tasmania passes a law to raise the minimum age of marriage from 12 for women and 14 for men to 16 and 18, respectively. Other states then follow. But can you imagine that? The age of consent was 12?
Well, it's probably settling Tasmania. People probably died pretty early, so they had to get married quick.
Well, maybe so, but I mean, working in theater, we work with a lot of kids, and I know a lot of 12-year-old girls, and they're little girls. Well, they're not women. They're not marrying stock. You don't do that.
That's true.
Australia's first marriage act.
Nope. Well, I guess I'm thinking about a 12-year-old marrying a 14-year-old, and not a 12-year-old marrying like a 45-year-old.
Yeah, that's the bigger problem.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm with you on that one. My brain didn't initially jump there. Yeah, I was thinking of two kids.
That's think polygamist.
Yeah, okay.
Australia's first marriage act, November 9th, 1961. The Marriage Act 1961 makes marriage law uniform across the country and sets the minimum marriageable age as 18. It does not, however, formalize a definition of marriage. The marriage bar is abolished, November 18th, 1966. Now listen to this. The bar on employment of married women in the Commonwealth Public Service is abolished.
What year was that?
1966.
Wow.
So it was introduced at the beginning of the 1900s. The marriage bar was intended to keep women from stealing, that's in parentheses, stealing men's jobs and also to boost the birth rate. It meant many women kept their marriage a secret. So they felt like when you're single, yeah, you got to support yourself so you could have these jobs. Once you got married, you had to quit your job. And you couldn't do that. You had to stay home and have babies and take care of the house and not take a man's job.
That's crazy.
I know. And that was 1966 before they abolished that.
That's not that long ago.
No. First civil celebrant appointed. July 19th, 1973. Civil celebrancy is formally established in Australia by the Commonwealth Attorney General Lionel Murphy, despite widespread opposition. The first one he appointed was a 26-year-old woman named Lois Darcy. She was the first independent civil marriage celebrant.
Mrs. Darcy?
Yep.
Isn't that a character in Pride and Prejudice?
I never read that or saw the movie. Now, they also had no-fault divorce. Came about June 12th, 1975. that's about the same time, isn't it, as ours? Ours was in the 70s, too.
I think so, yeah.
Right around the same time. Family Law Act 1975 established principle of no-fault divorce, with 12 months separation being sufficient to prove breakdown of the marriage. Prior to that, some form of wrongdoing by either party had to be proved. In the wake of the act, the divorce rate temporarily skyrockets.
You know, a lot of states still have that. You have to be separated for 12 months before you can actually, the divorce can be finalized.
Yeah, they have time periods that you have to wait.
Right.
Other ones, once you get the paperwork done, you can do it.
Yeah, that's basically here.
Yeah. All right. Then in August 16th of 2004, the Marriage Act is amended. Under Prime Minister John Howard, the Marriage Act is amended to add the following definition. Marriage means the union of a man and a woman to the exclusion of all others voluntarily entered into for life. Certain unions are not marriage. Unions solemnized in a foreign country between a man and another man or a woman and another woman must not be recognized as a marriage in Australia. So they came out and specified. And I remember how before they said it wasn't specified.
That's pretty clear.
So that was in 2004. Now they had a push for same-sex marriage November 1st, 2016. And the government, the act was defeated. And what they wanted to do was put a vote out to the country and see how they felt about it. And it got defeated that they even put the vote out.
Huh.
Finally, they got that done in November of 2017, and it went out by mail for everybody to answer the question, should the law be changed to allow same-sex couples to marry? 12.7 million postal votes were submitted, with 61.6% voting yes. So
that's a major undertaking, all those mailings.
Yeah, and they said even the lowest district, the lowest return vote of yes was still 58%.
Right.
So there was not like there was any districts that said
it's clear.
Yeah. Yeah. And so finally, on December 8th of 2017, the bill passed the House of Representatives. Federal Parliament passed a bill which the definition of marriage is changed to the union of two people to the exclusion of all others, replacing the previous definition that marriage was between a man and a woman. There was a loud applause in the chamber when the vote was read out. Some same-sex marriage campaigners in the gallery broke into an impromptu rendition of I Am, You Are Australian, with some politicians joining in.
I don't know that song.
I guess it's a patriotic song for Australians. I couldn't sing it. We'll have to call Leon Keith and get him to sing that for us.
Exactly.
But that's some of the ones from some of the other countries and the things they went through. But you see that they all had their learning curve. And I guess it's like you say, though, that the age of consent was younger back in the old days, but people didn't live so long. I mean, if you were 36, you were an old man.
Yeah.
You survived, you know, getting shot by somebody or run over by a horse or something like that, you know, or getting some kind of disease that would kill you, like anthrax or chicken pox or
dysentery.
Something. Yeah. Or some kind of venereal disease. Those would kill you too. They didn't have penicillin then.
No. But if you think about it, then basically all the marriage laws are kind of slowly conforming to a globalized consensus of what everyone's idea of marriage is, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, there's a big list of countries that now recognize same-sex marriage.
Right.
And then, of course, you have some where it's outlawed still.
Right.
So, but they're mostly the ones that are under a very tyrannical rule.
Right. But I mean, in general, for same-sex or heterosexual marriage, that all the laws seem to be basically kind of coming to be the same globally, just kind of different how we get there.
Yeah. and the way they go about their own government and how it works.
Yeah. I can't imagine sending out mailers in the United States.
No,
to
I
vote
can't
on
either.
Something like that.
And evidently that's a regular thing on different big causes like that. They want to see what the public thinks, and they send you a mailer and you vote. It's kind of like doing the census or something like that.
Yeah. It's odd. All right. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is a part of the show where we talk about different legal terms. I'm going to give Tommy a quick quiz. So first of all, I just got married.
Yes, you did.
At the surprise wedding ceremony, how many lavender martinis were drank?
I thought you said like 47.
That's right. 47 lavender martinis, which we made the simple serve for ourselves.
And I drank none of them. That's what we were wanting to go. So you had those bottles you were giving out.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what those were.
Yeah. Did you take some home with you?
Yeah, we got some, but we didn't know what to do with them.
Mix it with vodka and lemon juice.
Oh, okay.
It's delicious.
It was a freebie, so we took it. We didn't know what it was. I was putting it on as perfume to go out for the night. I'd put a little dab behind my ears.
Why are these sweat bees all over me?
I'm a simple syrup.
What is a Flamin' Dialis?
Flamin' Dialis. It's kind of like a Flamin' Cheeto, but he's the like the head bishop or something like that that presides at a marriage council, a marriage wedding or something. A marriage wedding?
The Flamin' Dialis was the high priest of Jupiter in Roman society. Oh, yeah. And the Flamin' Dialis presided over the conferatio, which was basically the patrician wedding ceremony, which had to be formalized with the Flamin' Dialis, the Pontifex Maximus, and 10 witnesses. So it was very, very formal.
I forgot he came from another planet.
And what is a dowry?
Dowry is a price that you pay for someone to take your daughter off your hands. Here, you marry her. I've supported her long enough.
That's true, I guess. Yeah, it's basically what the bride's family would pay to the groom in order to marry the...
It was getting your inheritance up front and to get you off to a good foot in life.
There you go. But it's not really in practice anymore.
No. Well, you don't get nothing for them now.
What was the name of the case that was the linchpin underneath the Obergefell decision? Do you remember?
Loving v. Virginia.
That's right. And do you remember the different grounds as to why, what the basis of the holding was for the Loving v. Virginia?
It was that marriage is a right and that they were discriminating against them simply because of race. And there was no positive reason or no good reason for what they were doing.
That's a really good answer, Tommy.
Why, thank you. I don't do those very often.
Yeah, marriage is a fundamental right. And that basically... by having these racial laws like this, you're violating their equal protection and due process. So,
well, there you go.
You were right on.
Well, every once in a while.
Well, that's going to do it. It was our marital edition of Court Appointed.
Well, that was good. You probably didn't even have to do much research. You probably already knew all that stuff, right? You've been through it enough to know all those things?
I didn't know anything about a Flamin' Dialis.
You didn't? I didn't either.
I did read the... Loving v. Virginia case many, many years ago, but I had to go back through it.
Well, I saw the movie. That was good.
Yeah. It's an interesting story. It's kind of sad, too. The guy passes away. I don't know if the movie goes into that or not. But
I thought a Flamin' Dialis is what happens the next morning after you've had tequila and burritos.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.